Accession number 17965, Sergeant Major Freddie Beadle, Reel 9.
Sergeant Major Beadle, Reel 9. You were saying that you'd been... You came back to go on a resettlement course to be trained in working sheet metal.
Yeah.
How had you chosen that particular trade?
Well, I didn't know anything about the trade at all at the time that I selected it, but I was given a list of the courses that they did in this particular training centre, and I opted for the sheet metal working. Not for any particular reason at all, but...
Was that choice made when you arrived back in Britain? Or
oh, no,
you...
before I left. The situation, as far as the course such as that was concerned, was that you had to be within the last 6 months of your regular service before you could come home and go in to do that. That is what I did. I applied for this particular course in India, and was sent home in time to do 6 months training at that particular trade up to the time I was due to for release, which would have been the 10th of October 1939.
Had there been any attempt to persuade you to re-engage as you came towards the end of your...
Yes, the RSM now be right up to the time I was due to march out of barracks to come home, advising me to sign on.
What arguments did he use to try and persuade you?
He didn't use any arguments at all. He just said I was a fool to be retiring, and did his best to persuade me not to retire. But you would have thought at that stage he would have said there's going to be a war. At that stage in India, we didn't think it was going to be a war. Not in the lower ranks, anyway.
So he didn't use that argument at all?
No.
Did he offer you any inducements to stay on?
No, he wouldn't be in a position to offer anything like that. But it's always easy to say what would have happened or wouldn't have happened when it's passed. But when it's at the stage you've got to make your mind up, it's you that's got to make your mind up on these things. But in reflection, I would say that I was silly to have retired. I'm pretty sure I would have done better for myself if I'd signed on. But that's only my guesswork now, having known what the past has been.
So you're back in England in March 1939,
yes.
And this was a time when the Germans were actually breaking up Czechoslovakia. They were occupying Bohemia and Moravia, breaking the promises they'd made at Munich in 1938.
Yes.
Did that have any impact on your state of mind at the time?
No more than anybody else's at that point in time. I don't think the majority of people in England at that point in time really seriously thought there was going to be a war.
Did the actual outbreak of war in September come as a shock to you?
No, strangely enough, it didn't. Although I didn't truly think there was going to be a war, but it came. You know, it wasn't really a surprise. What did surprise me was the fact that I got myself a job in sheet metal working. While you was on this course, you could tout around for a vacancy.
Yes.
And I got a job with Ransom, Sims and Jeffries, the mower manufacturers in Ipswich. And I started work there. And I was out for 13 days and then recalled, of course. My 13th day came on the 3rd of September, 39. So, lo and behold, I had a letter saying, you will
Is this because of your obligation as a reservist?
That's right. Being a boy, I had to sign on regular service for 9 years' service from the age of 18.
Yes.
Anything I served under the age of 18
was
bucksheesh. But then it was 9 years, then 3 years reserve. And it was always made up to 12.
Yes.
You get 7 and 5 or 5 and 7. And we were 9 and 3.
Mm. How did your employers react when you told them that you'd had this letter?
That's a very good question, because I didn't have an employer then, although I'd only been out 13 days. I got this job at Ransom Sims of Jeffries, quite interested really, and it was obvious that it was a closed shop from a union point of view.
Yes.
When I went along for an interview with the manager of the sheet metal work department, there was the shop steward of the trade union present while I was being interviewed. It was decided to give me the job. I'd been in the job for this for about 10 days. I was sent for by the manager, who informed me that he'd got to give me the sack because he'd been decreed by the trade union. Otherwise, they were going to withdraw their labour.
Had you been aware of this trouble bubbling up?
Well, I was a bit annoyed about it, actually, and I let myself know that I was a bit annoyed, because on the first day I started work there, by the mere virtue of the fact that there had been a trade union shop steward present on my engagement, I had words with that shop steward and pointed out to him that I was quite prepared to act according to the trade union's rules and regulations, whatever they might be. And I was quite willing to join the union should it be possible to do so. I'd said that to him on my first day of employment. Yet they came, they said nothing to me except the manager, who had to pass the message on to me. I went to the Labour Exchange and explained what had happened, and had an interview with the manager there, and I think he would have made a case of it had the war not started and I'd been called up again.
Do you have any idea why it was that the shop steward had taken against you?
No, nobody told me why. It's the manager had told me that they weren't... You would have thought the shop steward would have come along and decently said so. I had left myself an open book in his hands, but he never had the courage to come and say anything about it. I don't know. And the jobs that they gave me to do, I was quite capable of doing. Apart from sheet metal working, which is quite a job, really. I also, while I was in Wadden, I taught myself to weld, so I could mix my welding with my sheet metal working. So I was a little bit naggard about it.
Were you happy to go back into the army in the light of those circumstances?
No, I wasn't really, because, again, I'd got about 6 months away from the army again. And I wasn't upset by it. I lost nothing by it, because when I went back, I was re-engaged on my rank. So I was re-engaged as a sergeant, or a lance sergeant, as it was in those days. I was only a lance sergeant for a month or two, as was all the quick promotions of the war. I was then promoted full sergeant.
So when you got your letter saying you will, what did it tell you to do? When you got your letter saying you will, what did it tell you to do?
Report to Bodmin.
To Bodmin?
Yeah.
What happened when you got down to Bodmin?
Oh, when I got down to Bodmin, the place was flooded with troops, of course, with all the reservists and everything else there. They had to put tentage up around the depot to accommodate all these people. one of the first things that was decided was to get all these people fit. So they wanted PT instructors. I wasn't a PT instructor, I was a duty sergeant, but I'd always been able to do PT pretty well, and I'd taken an interest in that sort of thing. So without any consultation, I was designated to report to the gymnasium and help out in the gyms, which I did. I was also sent there, I think, like that, because I knew so many people in the regiment. I'd been in every company in the 1st Battalion, and I knew quite a lot of the 2nd Battalion. So I did my job as a PT instructor.
Had you done any courses in...
No, I had never done a... Well, when I say I'd never done a PT course, as I said before, we had promotion exams from, say, corporal to sergeant in the 1st Battalion, and PT was included as a subject in that. And I always did quite well in that.
This promotion to sergeant or lance sergeant, did that occur when you were at Lahore?
I was made lance sergeant in... Where was it? Oh, that's right, yes, we were in Lahore at the time, yes.
And how was that done? Did you have a course, another cadre course, to go from corporal to lance sergeant?
Yes, I did have a cadre course prior to that promotion.
What was on that? What, other than the PT that you've mentioned, what other subjects did you have to study?
All the usual subjects of an infantry course, which I've explained before, I think. To anything that's done by the infantry, but we did all that course, even up to the point of doing tactics, which was a bit of a new thing, really, except for we did our first tactics subject in promotion courses in 1933 under Major I.E.F. Campbell, a great character.
What level did it go up to? Were you doing section tactics or platoon or company tactics? Do you remember what the sort of level was?
Well, on the promotion course from corporal to sergeant, you usually had a couple of second lieutenants, recent lieutenants, second lieutenants in the regiment, who hadn't had a lot of training. They would be included in the course and do exactly the same as anybody else in the course.
Yes. But so would they be confined, would the tactics be confined to platoon tactics, or would it go up to company level?
The tactics went up to battalion level.
To battalion level?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And you mentioning the PT, what did you have to learn about PT when you were going from corporal to lance sergeant?
more or less, just to know how to instruct PT. There's a way of instructing in every subject, I think. There's a wrong way and a right way.
What is the right way of instructing in PT?
Never
taught.
Never let the people behind you, never let the people you're instructing to be behind your back. In other words, you want to see what they're up to all the time.
So you have to face your class all the time.
That's right, yes. Walk round the sides.
Yes. Anything else that you remember as part of the...
Well, as far as PT concerned, I was ordered to report to the gyms and help out in the gymnasium, and I was sent on a course in Tidmouth in December 1939. A fortnight's course, best of my memory, which I did quite well at. And lo and behold, on getting back to the battalion, in the early part of January 1940, I was sent off for an advanced course at Aldershot, the Army Physical Training School at Aldershot. Right.
What did you learn on the Tidmouth course? The 2-week course.
Same again, how to instruct PT.
Is there anything new?
They did go into a bit of gymnastics.
Yes.
But it wasn't gymnastics we wanted in those days. It was something quick, and so it was going to work and make people fit. Mm. I mean, you can imagine some of the reservists. They've been years doing nothing in the way of exercise. So they really had to be chased around to get them fit. But an interesting thing about the course in Tibworth, it was, I don't know if you remember the winter, it was the winter 1939-40, and it was very, very cold in December 1939, and it was the first winter I had at home since the 1927-28 winter. And I was galloping around Tibworth in a pair of shorts, which didn't help me very much.
So was this done in the open air?
Most of it was in the open air. There was a big gymnasium there, but we were out in the open doing things just as much as inside.
Was the course there all practical, or did you do any theory as well?
No, it was just practical. When I went on to the school in January
at Aldershot.
At Aldershot in January 40. Then we went into the depths a bit there on the course there. But again, it was greatly restricted because they had to get people out quickly to battalions.
How long was the Aldershot course then?
I've got a feeling it was 4 weeks. Mm. I can't remember exactly. That is something that I should remember, but I can't. It might be in my records, I expect it probably is.
What was the emphasis on the Aldershot course?
Again, it was on PT itself, really, because that was a thing to get people fit. I mean, anything other than that, like gymnastics or whatever, a little bit of cream on the top, really, but
When you mean fit, do you mean fit in the sense of being strong, or fit in the sense of having endurance, or
endurance fit was the thing? You see, so you added plenty of walking and running, PT kit, ammunition boots,
yes,
galloping around. But that was the main thing. But then, following up with that, you would be the only one in the battalion who would organise such things as boxing matches.
Yes, I was going to ask you if there
organisation was of sport, yes, in, yes, general.
Was there a great emphasis upon using games as a way of getting people fit?
Yes, the games. There was an emphasis on using games to break up the monotony of the general PT. And there were certain ways that one could train people, having them doing a lot of PT at the same time as competing in a game, such,
yes,
as what we used to term as potted sports. And you could do all this in the gymnasium. It might be 6 points in the gymnasium where you did a front roll in one, or you jumped a certain height in another, or you jumped a certain length in another, or you climbed a rope in another, or you balanced a bar in another, and you'd split your chaps up into however many teams were sensible, and they would go round these, and the winning team, you'd give them marks on how far they did on the going round, and make it competitive. So, and any sort of small games, like we used to call it handball in those days, but it's now called basketball, those sort of games were included. And then we had endurance courses, of course.
What were on those?
Brick walls. Climbing frames, ropes, yes, slides. Yes, you name it. Everything was in there.
Was there any use of weight training?
No, it wasn't in the curriculum weight training at all. Although in places where if you had a bit of ingenuity and you had a group of chaps who wanted to do a bit of weight training, you did something about it. For instance, in number 2 Cod Depot in the Middle East, we made some weights out of concrete, mixed up some concrete, put on the end of bars and made some weights for people who wanted to have a go at it. Yeah. But we never taught it. When I say we never taught it, we taught them how to lift properly and what have you properly, because of hernias or what have you, but other than that, it wasn't a subject.
What about circuit training? Was that used? Circuit training?
Circuit training. Sorry?
Circuit training.
I don't know what you mean.
It's where you go round in a circle and at each station you do a sequence of exercises. So you might do 10 press-ups and then go onto the next mat and do 10 sit-ups and then onto the next mat and do 10 dorsal raises and then squat thrusts and then burpees and then back to press-ups and so on, round and round and round.
In my days, that was potted sports, which I've just spoken about.
Oh, I see, yes. Except these are sort of just basic floor exercises, really, or star
jumps. You could
put
anything that was active. There was nothing specifically laid down.
Yes.
I mean, you use a bit of that with what you've got.
Yeah.
And you could put anything in it and make it competitive. It was a very good form of competitive PT, really.
Yeah. So... On the four-week course at Aldershot, was this also mainly practical, or did you have any theory in that?
We had no written theory, to the best of my memory. We had lectures from a doctor.
Yes.
Obviously, from the physical side. No, nothing on the technical side, as far as I can remember.
Where did you learn about safety? Because you mentioned about the question of safety when lifting weights. How did you learn that?
Oh, no, that's a good question. Where I was taught that, I can't remember. I can't remember where I was taught it. It wasn't a general thing to teach. The only way that I saw it practiced in the convalescent depot was somebody with a bit of an ingenuity made some weights. And having they made it, then of course at the school, at the PT school, you're taught the correct way of lifting and not lifting, of course, keeping the back straight, etc. Now I come to think of it. So one was able to pass that information on to anybody who was to using weights. But, yes. I must have been taught that somewhere, must I? I can only think it was at the school when I first went there.
Do you remember what you learned from the doctor, when he was the medical specialist, what he was talking about?
Well, mainly speaking, he spoke about bone and muscle. What to do and what not to do, I suppose. And to locate by name the actual problem, whether it be the femur in the upper leg or the tibia in the lower arm or what have you. We learned all those things so that we could pinpoint, if somebody had hurt themselves, what the problem was. But we weren't encouraged to do too much in that line, I must say, in those days.
What were you doing in between Tidworth and Aldershot? Were you still with the battalion?
I went back to to Bodmin and went into the gymnasium doing the PT, of course.
So you were in the gym at the depot?
Pardon?
You were in the gym at the depot?
Yes.
Yeah. And were your... the people you were training then, were they all reservists being called back, or did you start getting national service men as well?
We had national service as well. People called up in their age group. But the majority in those early days was reservists, I should think. Now I come to think about it.
What was their state of mind when they came back to the depot?
Well, most of them... I think enjoyed coming back. I don't know. I might be wrong in saying that, but I never spoke to anybody who was upset about it or didn't want to come back. They all seemed quite happy to do so. I mean, it's something you know you've got to do. You sign on for it. So it's no good moaning about it afterwards, is it?
Did you find any of them who were so unfit that they weren't able to serve? Because you said that some of them had got unfit, you know, as civilians.
No, nobody as bad as that, really. Quite an interesting point there about fitness or what have you. Pre-war, if you was 30 years of age,
yes,
PT wasn't compulsory. It's just some limit age that you could, really. But,
how did you actually measure their fitness? Did you have any rule of thumb, standards by which you gauged whether someone was fit or not fit?
No, you could only do it by practice, really. For instance, I can't remember the exact measurements of that now. You had to run a mile in a certain time, you had to jump a height at a certain height, you had to sprint 100 yards or 200 yards in a certain time. You put these tests to them. It was a test, incidentally, which was supposed to be done by battalions every year. I don't think it always was.
Do you remember doing it when you were in the battalion in India?
Yes, we did do this test
every year.
Yeah, in particular when Major I.F. Campbell was with us, because he was PT minded. In fact, if you go into the gymnasium in Aldershot, on one of the boards there, you'll find his name mentioned. He was an instructor there. He left our battalion and went to the school as an officer instructor. And he had a burst appendix and died. A terrible loss, really.
What about injuries when you were working up your reservists back to a reasonable state of fitness? Did you have a lot of...
strangely enough, not one. Not one. I hadn't thought about that before, but with all those people going through, and after that resting, I can't remember not one of injuring himself in the gyms or while on PT.
Now, let's suppose you got a squad in of reservists who'd come back after some years out of the army, and you've got to train them back up to an acceptable level. How long, roughly, do you think it took to actually get them back to a reasonable state of military fitness?
Well, a twofold answer to that, I think, in as much that if you concentrate on the fitness and give them more PT or fitness exercises, whichever they may be, for a longer period, say, a complete month, by the end of a month, you could have them almost fit again.
Yes.
I think the way that works is that the first week for them, or the first 2 weeks, are agonising because they're not up to doing what you want them to do. But so they're stiffening up in that first 2 weeks. And then in the next 2 weeks, they're gradually getting fitter and fitter. And they're getting less pain with their work, if that's the right word. So it does take time, there's no doubt about that.
If you're starting with someone from scratch, as it were, on that basis, how many hours a day can you expect to work them on strenuous exercise?
I think if you vary the thing around a bit, about 4 hours, I would think. You can always finish up with a walk and run. Which most people don't like anyway. But
did you encounter any resistance to your instruction as a result of the stiffness and the pain?
Never. Never. No, I don't think people resist if you treat them the right way. The thing to do when you get a group like that is to explain it's a situation to them. You tell them they're jolly unfit. There's only one thing to do, get them fit again. And to get fit, they've got to go through a bit of pain. Every time I went to the PT school or a professor course or anything, for the first week, although I was doing exercise every day, for the first week it was agony for me. For the second week, by the end of the second week, I was fit again. It's one of those things, you've got to go through a bit of a pain barrier.
Did you always do the exercises with your classes to demonstrate?
Well, yes, you would do that, but of course you're not doing them as many times in your class because you're walking around putting the class right. While you're doing that, you can't be doing the exercise. But
presumably you have one class after another, so you're...
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. You keep reasonably fit. There's no doubt about
clock
that.
Up the numbers, wouldn't you, as you were...
Pardon?
You would clock up the numbers for yourself as you were demonstrating
what to do. You would do, yes. Mm. But, when you're doing it every day, you don't mind so much. It's not so painful. I enjoyed it, to be quite honest.
Well, even the marching and running?
Yes.
Yeah. How far would you go when you set them to walking and running?
Oh, when you're combining it with PT and that, no more than about 3 miles. Mm. But that could be quite painful, 3 miles. Depends what speed you set them off at.
Well, and also with the surface you're going over.
That's right.
Were these things cross